Call a Monday, January 29th, special common council meeting to order. Mr. Liberta, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson.
Here.
Alderman Dandrea.
Here.
Alderman Mayer.
Here.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderman Taylor.
He's next door, but at the moment absent.
Alderman Barber.
Here.
Alderman Nelson.
Here. We have a quorum. Please rise and join the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 1 is citizens' comment period. Anyone wishing to speak, please rise, come forward, give us your name and address, and speak your piece. Joy, good evening.
Good evening. Joy Dragunas-Ingales, 7573 Highview Drive, Greendale. Couple of things. First, Mayor Olson, I wanted to address something from the last meeting that I was way too sick to even concern myself with at that point. You brought up how the neighbors keep coming back and saying, we want this, and then you come up with suggestions, and we don't like that. I think the problem has been where we keep giving the suggestions that would satisfy us, but the board keeps coming with suggestions that aren't going to work. So I think we're not being heard. I think I've been very clear as to what would work for me. I think some of the other neighbors have as well. But again, I just don't think people are listening to the exact words. And one of the biggest arguments that came up the last meeting, was when the neighbors were talking about, you started talking about the berm. And Wilhelm, Alderwoman Wilhelm kept saying, well, I would have thought that the berm would have been better. What was said at that meeting on December 21st was that the neighbors to the west wanted to keep the wooded area and add a berm. And this discussion kept going on about, well, we're going to keep the trees instead of the berm and this and that. That's not what was said. And I think therein lies the problem. People aren't listening. And that was stated over and over again at that December 21st meeting. The other part of this that I wanted to address was it has been stated that this project will not be a burden to the neighbors, to our way of life, that traffic won't be an issue, that it won't affect our property values. About 6 months ago, I actually spoke with a gentleman that I was referred to who has written many published books and papers studying the effects of sport venues on neighborhoods and real estate and homes specifically. And his research will tell you over and over again across the country that it does affect them adversely because of the lights, the noise, and the traffic. And when these venues either close or build somewhere else, you will see the property values rise again. So to say that this will not adversely affect those of us in Greendale, and those especially in Hawthorne and Stonehenge, I believe is presumptuous, to say the least, and I don't think it's accurate. And when you're looking at a gentleman who has studied this for a living, who's kind of confirming our thoughts, my suggestion would be maybe for the board to look into that as well. To say that there won't be traffic issues, that's completely incorrect. And Stephanie will speak later. She works for the state. She does traffic. She does these projects all day long. She actually tore apart the report for us and dumbed it down and did bullet points. it states in there basically there will be absolute gridlock. So once again, on 76th Street, very specifically. So to say that there won't be traffic problems and issues, I believe once again is incorrect. And then it goes on to our way of life and our comfort in our homes. Can any one of you imagine living right next door or across the street or with even 3 miles of a 4,000-seat stadium with concerts? Do you think that would be a place you would look for a home in the future? Or you would say, oh, yeah, that's exactly where I want to live. I want to raise my family there. No, I can guarantee that none of you would be buying a home in that area. If that's the case, then why should we have to live in our homes with something like this in our area? If you want to keep it baseball, like I've said before, keep it baseball. This is how Zimmerman sold it. Fine, have baseball games. But be done. That's it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Mrs. Gint.
Thank you. Dana Gint, 9011 West Hawthorne Lane in Franklin, of course.
I did get your email. I just haven't had time to.
I understand. Did you get the email from Matt Sobosinski that he asked to
I
be?
Did.
Are you going to read that into the public record?
I will
record?
Not, but staff will.
But staff will. Okay, thank you. Otherwise, yes, that I do that. Okay. I would like to ask the elected officials to please raise their hand if they would be willing to drink the water from the private well in the landfill. Really, that's pretty surprising to me, especially since you guys will never have to deal with that issue. So basically, everyone on the council raised their hands that they would be willing to drink the water in the landfill or adjacent to the landfill.
Now, you're talking about from the wells. You're
not yes, the private
about
wells. Yes, I'm sorry, the private wells if I forgot that portion. What is convenient is that none of you who raised your hand actually have to drink, cook, or bathe in the water from this landfill that the development is proposing to disrupt and compress. There are stacks of documents indicating illegal dumping, hazardous waste, harbor spoils, solvents, and other carcinogen components in this landfill. This landfill has natural occurring springs in it. How can you assure the neighbors that these springs will not carry contaminants to their homes? The development agreement should include the budget for the private wells to be changed over to municipal water. Is that going to be part of the agreement? Is that being evaluated?
It's been evaluated, and it's not currently part of the agreement.
Okay. If it is not going to be included in changing over us to municipal water, does the development agreement include the monthly monitoring of all the wells in the Hawthorne subdivision?
Not monthly.
Why wouldn't it be monthly?
Because currently it's every 6 months.
Well, obviously it's been monitoring every 6 months since 1993, and that's because it's just been sitting there.
That, as we discussed two meetings ago when you asked that same question, mm-hmm. That's part and parcel of an agreement with Milwaukee County.
That they do what?
Whatever Milwaukee County did would be in an agreement with Mr. Zimmerman and his group to do. It doesn't have anything to do with the city.
So the monitoring, the 6 months monitoring, is part of the developer agreement with the county?
Part of the agreement with the
okay.
I believe. I'm not party to that, so I don't know for sure.
Well, I would like to suggest it be obviously changed to monthly because you're doing significant excavations and disruption of the landfill as opposed to it just sitting there and being monitored every 6 months.
I don't mean to be argumentative, but it's not my agreement, so I can't change it.
I'm just saying I think it should be included on the development agreement for the Ballpark Commons. Also, has a comprehensive independent study of the private wells been completed for the entire Hawthorne neighborhood before the construction starts? That means all the wells being evaluated for the whole neighborhood.
That's part of what the county's responsibility is or was.
Okay. What's interesting is the developer cited the following landfills being developed into athletic fields as comparables to this development: Fresh Kills, New York, and also St. Paul Stadium. Both of these developments had budgets that were 2.5 times the planned budget. The St. Paul Stadium was $25 million, ended up being over $64 million, and had delays for years as a result of environmental issues. What will happen if that occurs in this location? If it exceeds, if it's 2.5 times the budget that you have, you know, supplied?
Our budget will be our budget.
So if he opens up the landfill and there's environmental hazard?
There's no plan to open the landfill other than, well, there is no plan to open the landfill.
Well, you are excavating. You're putting in a new one.
There are some portions that will be open, but it's not a wholesale opening of the landfill.
Well, to put in the new methane, you know, system, you're obviously digging up and moving things and to dig up dirt.
You get your choice. You can have it as it is.
I'd be fine with that.
You say that pretty quickly because that system is long overdue for replacement. Milwaukee County has no money to replace it and no intention to replace it. Your city council has heard you, and I said this two meetings ago. We've heard you say that methane is an issue. We agree with you. And we are putting in a redundant system for your protection.
Not only the methane is the issue, though, but the private water wells.
Go ahead and tell us you don't want it.
Okay.
Go ahead and tell us you don't want it. We won't put it in. That'll save us all kinds of money.
But you're obviously going to be putting in a development on top of it, so the methane pipeline does need to be updated for that purpose.
I don't believe that's true.
Interesting. The homes in this neighborhood have private wells at various steps.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Folks, you're wanting your cake and eating it, too. I understand that. That's natural. Okay? The reality is if nothing happened there today, nothing went forward, that system is already 6 to 8 years past its useful life. Right? You all agree with that? Not up and down.
No, I don't agree with that.
Okay. That's what the county tells us. That's the way it is. It's their system, right? That's also what experts tell us.
Well, they're
so
trying
that system
to...
is out of date. It's due to be replaced. How much money does the county have to replace it?
Probably zero.
Zero. So you want an outdated system or you want a new redundant system.
But that doesn't mean they couldn't find funding or do something.
There. Yeah. Dana.
Well, Milwaukee really? County, if they're responsible for it, they would have to replace it. So if the
they
land stayed the way it was.
They sent us a bill to move streetlights for $3,000 and their streetlights.
I'm just saying if nothing happened and the county still owned the system, they would have to repair and replace it. And they would probably put, you know.
Okay. I'm sorry. I took your time.
Okay. In addition, the monitoring of the Root River should be included in the development agreement. The UW Parkside environmental management students are monitoring the Root River for the Lake Michigan water diversion in Waukesha. The Root River should be monitored in Franklin and Greendale as a result of this proposed development on the landfill. Is that going to be included in the developer agreement?
No.
Why not?
Because it's not an issue for us.
The Root River isn't an issue for you?
Environmental issue. It's between the county and the developer.
So you're going to contaminate the Root River even though it runs through Franklin and it's one of the environmental. Well, that's hard. That's a ambiguous answer because you don't know that for sure. This is a landfill with historic waste in it. You don't know where it's going to go.
It's the responsibility of a property owner. We're not the property owner.
Okay. You're just permitting it. Another point I need to make is that the City of Franklin school taxes will raise by building apartments in a TID. The school-age children need to be educated, but there is no local tax revenue to pay for their education. This development does not contribute $1 to educate these children for the lifetime of the TID. Will a pilot payment be required and included in the development agreement for over $14 million of tax-funded school expense throughout the term of the TID? And that's when developing on the composition, and that's what depending on the composition of the middle market apartments. So it could be twice that amount. So will there be a pilot?
No.
I know earlier in the agreement, or earlier in the whole process, there was discussion of a pilot.
There's currently not, to my understanding, there's not a pilot in the agreement.
So who is responsible for educating these children that are going to be in the apartments?
For the number of children there, the Franklin taxpayers will.
So our taxes are going to get up to be raised to educate these children, even though you're enabling this project?
That's an assumption I can't verify.
Well, obviously they need to be, their education needs to be paid for, and it's not being paid by the TID.
What's always left out of in the statement that you just made where there are going to be more kids is the fact that the school district needs growth of additional children to maintain or increase their state aids. So the reality is that the state aid's increase will probably do well to pay for a majority of the students.
I don't see that the Franklin School District has any issues with enrollment. My children have 30 children in their class, so I don't foresee that as being an issue. Most of the school classes are overrun, actually. So
I don't manage a school district.
Right. I'm just saying that I think that that's not correct. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Alderman Mayer.
Dana?
Yes.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
Your $14 million for the schools, is that based on an average of children?
Right. I estimated 200 apartments because I knew it was between 200 and 300 because I don't know. Has there been determined how many apartments are actually going to be in the proposal at this point? So has it been finalized?
The preliminary plan approval is for 400. We've all seen this suggestion.
400?
Total.
It's been 400 since the beginning of the project.
But that was with the Sports Village. That was with the Sports Village that is no longer viable, correct?
So it's always, since the origin of the project, there were 300 apartments south of Boston, and there were another 100 included as part of what was thought of as the Sports Village north of Boston. The revision to the plan, the most recent revision that we've seen, that dates more or less dates back to March of last year. Retained the 300 apartments realigned south of Boston, and then there's an addition of a building. It's often seen on site plans as, I believe, M1, which is a large commercial building. It's now, originally it was single-story commercial buildings along Boston. It's now intended to be multi-story mixed use. So there's an inclusion of about 100 apartments relocated from the Sports Village to that south side of Boston. So it started out as about 400 apartments. It remains about 400 apartments. We've all seen the suggestion in the press that they could be some of those apartments were moved in favor of senior housing. That has not been brought forward as a full submittal to the city. We haven't considered that action yet, but the current scenario is for 400 apartments.
Okay, so you're telling me there's going to be 400 apartments south of Rawson for middle market apartment level, not luxury high-end apartments, which was originally proposed. Is that correct?
You know, you're using terms that mean things, right?
Mm-hmm.
This high level, this mid-level, they're rather subjective in determination, so I'm not going to say they're mid-level or high-level. We have an understanding of where the market's at for apartments, for quality apartments that are getting built in the environment today. And this aligns with quality apartments. This isn't, you know, the determination of mid-level is maybe a resident adjective, high-level is maybe a developer adjective. The reality is they're market-rate apartments that are being built.
Well, when the TID, the creation of the TID was established, the PDD, it was proposed to have 300 luxury high-end apartments with granite and stainless steel. So I don't know if maybe I'm not using the term correctly, but I consider that a high-end luxury apartments. And I know in newspapers and things like that, it's been indicated that it's now market-level apartments south of Rawson.
Again, the determination of luxury is a subjective term.
I understand that.
There's no definition that's consistent across the board about what that means or doesn't mean. So we evaluate it as a market-rate apartment. We have assumptions about rent values per square foot associated with that we work with, and this has remained.
So what is the rent value per square foot then?
Ballpark in a $1.40 a square foot.
Okay. And what is the composition? Are they two bedrooms, one bedrooms?
A mix.
So you can't tell me if there's 100 three bedrooms. Anyways, the number that I came up with, I actually used 200 apartments, but now I'm stunned to find out that there's potential of 400. And then I used the ratio of 0.3, which is the ratio that the school district uses per apartments for children. And then it's multiplied by 7,000, I think it's 358 or whatever the tax bill shows that, you know, or you can look up on the Franklin School District website what each child's education costs for the year. So I multiplied the, well, it'll be 400 homes, 400 apartments times 0.3 times $7,538. So you'd come up with close to, I don't know, $20 million? I'm not quite sure. I don't have my calculator on me. So,
okay, but it was the estimated children produced in apartments times the amount of cost to educate those children
yearly
over the span of the TIF district.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. And obviously, the cost to educate children will obviously go up also. So I just use the current rate. But obviously, over the span of 18 years, it will obviously increase dramatically.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Excuse me. I'd like to address what she was just talking about.
Name and address for record.
Oh, Judy Mills, 8018 West Winston Way in Franklin. I taught in Oak Creek for 30 years, and I was there during the time the district was developing, and they got the great idea of putting apartments in. And they, as soon as those apartments were built, they were all high and medium and low. They filled with kids a higher number than that formula that schools go by. They filled with a higher number of children than that formula predicted. And all of a sudden, we needed to build two elementary schools to house those kids rather than the one that they were anticipating. And as they came through the elementary school, we knew right away that we needed a middle school to house them because so many kids showed up in those apartments. And this didn't even count the you're talking about the education cost of furniture and teachers and et cetera. It was an unbelievable amount of kids the minute those buildings opened up, where if you looked at that square footage of land, you could have built maybe 5-6 houses on that land. But because the apartments were there and they were high-rise apartments, they could put mega amounts of people in that very small amount of space. So you need to think, when you put up apartments, the number of children that you are bringing into a community in these apartments. The other thing was that those became our problem kids, number two. You always knew they came from the apartments, and that's where the cops were going all the time. They hired more police officers right off the bat to handle those apartments, because usually if we had trouble with kids, you knew they were the kids from the apartments, not the kids coming out of homes. And that was just a given. Not that kids out of homes didn't cause problems, but the apartment kids, they just were a bigger issue. So it's something to consider, and I lived through that once those apartments went up. And I started teaching in the district before we had apartments, and it was a nice little community. And then those apartments went up. It changed the character of the schools incredibly. And as long as I'm here, I'd also like to, when you talk about what a development does to a community, I grew up in Hales Corners, so I've lived in this area my whole life. And for all, those of you that have been around here forever, you might remember Muskego Beach, which was also called Dandelion Park. It had a number of different names. But that development, when Muskego put that in, that was supposed to bring development to Muskego going back many, many years. It was on Little Muskego Lake, and that was to draw people in, and that was going to help them go from a farming community out in the boonies. And at that time, Franklin, Hales Corners, and Muskego, we were the boonies. All right. So what that turned out to be, this place that had it had a Ferris wheel. It had
Miss Mills.
What?
Franklin, not Muskego.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is that thing that was supposed to be for children, the lakefront situation where people could come with their boats, etc. It had a Ferris
Mills,
wheel, etc.
Franklin.
Muskego Beach turned into a Hell's Angels place. It turned into a scumbag.
Thank you, Miss Mills.
Yeah.
Please,
it took
Hale,
it
Your
took Muskego down the tubes, and
Thank
Muskego
you,
did not develop. The whole lake had shacks around it,
Thank
not
you,
million-dollar homes, and that Muskego, until they worked for a half century to get rid of Muskego Beach and Dandelion Park.
Please don't make me call you out of order. Have a seat. Thank you.
Well,
thank you very much.
You just have to think about putting these developments in.
Thank you very much.
And, Your Honor, I'm from Muskego. My parents lived there since 1971, and her revisionist history is so off base. I just want to point that out for the record.
Anyone else wishing to speak, please? Mr. Plevin.